Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
here's the thing I will tell you. There's no other pair of podcast hosts who cruise and swing so successfully in tight slacks.
We are
two wild and crazy guys. Okay, we're here on Rockin' the Suburbs, and Patrick Foster is not with us for the next three episodes because he's out dealing with some dad business, but ably taking the Patrick Foster seat is my friend Chris Wadsworth. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
And I'm Jim Lenihan, of course, and we decided to have Chris in here because he and I have been talking for a while about novelty songs. I know that's an interest of yours, right?
Well, as you probably know, I don't have a deep musical knowledge when it comes to a lot of actual, real quality songs. But when it comes to some of the more ridiculous songs that have popped up over the years, for some reason, I've always had a fondness for those. So yes, we've talked about novelty songs for a while.
I think my sense of it is that you have just kind of a general affinity for like humor in general. I mean, you're the kind of guy, I always get the sense of that, you know, you like comedy and TV and movies and funny little, I don't know, you know, comic books or comic strips, all that kind of stuff. You're a fan of, especially kind of like classic humor, things like that, right?
Yes, classic humor, nostalgic humor.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So this is right in line with that.
Right up that alley.
Okay. So we're going to play some novelty songs today in the next couple of days. And I think this also works well timing wise, because in a way it's kind of sort of Halloween-ish. In that sense. And I think a couple of the picks we have, you know, maybe go a little bit in that direction, but in the, you know, in the general sense of sort of the kind of playfulness of Halloween as well, in the idea that these aren't really like serious matters. I think it goes along with that too. So, and one other thing, Chris, so you have some experience behind the mic. Because for a while, you were like a TV star, right?
That's quite the exaggeration. I was a TV reporter and a TV anchor for a little while, many, many moons ago, like a couple of decades ago. But I was a TV reporter in Small Market, Illinois and Small Market, Florida, and also did some anchoring during that period. But it's been quite a while since I was on this side of a microphone.
Well, I think it's important to mention because I think people will automatically wonder, like, who is this guy with this golden voice?
Right? Yeah,
and that's,
you haven't heard me sing.
Years of training, right?
I guess so.
And my question about being on TV, being on camera, different from this, like, we're just kind of winging it, right? We're just talking. We don't have, like, this isn't scripted. You know, we have a plan, but that's about the extent of it. When you're on TV and not only are you like reading a teleprompter, but you also have like somebody talking to you in a earpiece, right?
Yeah. The person talking in your ear is not supposed to happen unless there's a problem.
Okay.
Usually they're either counting you down because you're running too long, or there's a breaking news and they're changing something in the script or in the rundown. But otherwise, you go off the teleprompter and they only interject in your ear when something's changing.
Breaking story, right?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
It's breaking news. But I just think that's got to be a real skill to be able to manage all of that. You know, the sense of the working, you know, playing to the camera, reading, understanding sort of the environment with the other anchors or reporters or whatever, and then having somebody like talking to you every once in a while in an earpiece. That's a lot to process, right?
I guess so. I never really thought of it that way, but yeah, I guess so. It can get confusing at times, and sometimes you'll see an anchor get a little flustered or a little frustrated. That's usually when someone is talking too much in their ear and they actually get a little irritated, and you can see it right on camera.
All right. Well, we don't have a producer here.
No.
To
talk
to
in
do
our
that,
ear.
Right. So we can just have a conversation. All right. So let's start with your novelty song pick. This is one that you've mentioned to me before as something that you have a nostalgic affinity for from your youth, right?
Right.
So what is this song?
Well, the song is Mr. Jaws from...
Mr. Jaws.
Yeah, from 1975.
Okay.
It was a comedy song done in the wake of the movie Jaws coming out. That was the big summer blockbuster of 1975. And Dickie Goodman, who was a longtime recording artist slash comedian who had done comedy songs for many years, put together a parody of the Jaws movie, doing it as a I guess a radio reporter or a TV reporter interviewing
right.
the shark and some of the other characters from the movie.
Right. So this goes back to sort of the broadcast news
I
interest,
guess so.
Right?
Look at that. Look how that comes around.
Well, let's hear a little bit of it and then we'll get you know your take on it.
We are here on the beach where a giant shark has just eaten a girl swimmer. Well, Mr. Jaws, how was it?
Dynamite!
And what did she say when you grabbed her?
Please, mister, please.
I know sharks are stupid, but what did you think when you took that first bite?
How sweet it is.
Mr. Jaws, before you swim out to sea, have you anything else to say? With me now is the local sheriff. Sheriff Brody, the shark will be back for lunch. What do you intend to do?
Do a little dance, make a little love, get down the line.
Just arriving is oceanographer Matt Hooper. Sir, if someone is attacked by a shark, what should they do?
Do the hustle.
We are going aboard the fishing boat of Captain Quint. Captain, will you be able to catch this giant shark?
I will.
Thank you,
I
Captain.
Will.
Captain, 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 when you catch one of these sharks, what do you feel like?
Okay, so there we get the idea there. It's a pastiche, right?
Yes, exactly.
Together.
Some people have called that an early example of sampling.
Yeah, right.
You know, in this case, that was his shtick that he did for several decades, where he would take clips from popular songs, also from TV shows, from commercials, and intercut them into a comedy song. That was it. And this was his biggest hit. This was kind of the culmination of 20 years of doing that.
It was a pretty big hit, right? I mean, this, I'm
did.
Reading here, it went to number four.
Yep, on the Billboard chart. Yep, Billboard Hot 100, number four. I think it was his biggest one. He had a few others that charted. I think he had, if I remember correctly, I read this up, 5 that charted total in his career, 17 that charted, 5 in the top 40, if I remember correctly. But this was tops for him.
And as a young boy, you probably thought this was just the height of hilarity at the time, right?
Well, I did, because I was a big Jaws fan even back then. I was only, give or take, I'm not sure, 7 or 8 years old about the time this would have come out. I had the 45. I only had a handful of records at that point, but I had Mr. Jaws, and I thought it was great. It actually, to my youthful mind, you know, some of it seemed a little salacious, you know, get down tonight, why can't we be friends, you know, things like that. It just, it felt a little adult for me.
Right.
And so I wasn't quite sure what they all meant. I wasn't familiar with all the songs. I've heard them all since.
Right.
But at the time, it just caught my attention and kind of captivated me. And I listened to it over and over.
It probably familiarized you with some songs that you hadn't heard before.
Oh, definitely.
Or introduced you to those. Yeah.
Yep.
I think that's true for a lot of people. I barely remember this. I mean, I do remember it, but I guess I did not remember it being as big as it really was, probably because I wasn't really paying attention to things
right.
like that at the
right.
time. But
right.
yeah, this was like a huge hit. So.
It was. Neither of us were really of the age. We were a little young for that to be, you know, I think if we'd been older, every one of those songs would have been really hilarious because we would have understood exactly the context of the song in the popular culture of the day.
Right.
I went back and listened to a couple of Dickie Goodman's older songs from the 50s and 60s, and they're cute, but because I don't have the context of maybe what that particular commercial meant or what that particular line from a TV show meant, it doesn't resonate like I think it would if you were in the moment.
So the other thing too is, you know, Jaws is a movie that has stood the test of time, and to the point even where both of my kids, independent of each other, when they got to be around like middle school age, something like that, asked if they could see Jaws. So it's like still holds up today. Like kids want to see this movie. I think adults remember it very fondly. I've watched it several times, you know, over the course of the years. It holds up. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
But I think it can't be overstated how big the phenomenon was in 1975, right? I mean, it was enormous at that time, the movie. And so this just, you know,
well, it was enormous, and people don't realize, and not to veer too much into film history, because I'm not an expert on that either. But my understanding is prior to that year, they didn't really have the concept of the summer blockbuster.
Right, right.
Movies were sometimes rolled out where they'd put it in a few cities for 1 week and then it would go to another few cities for another week. There wasn't this idea of one date, one mammoth opening in 500 theaters, 1,000 theaters, 2,000 theaters all at once. That concept didn't exist then. It was you know, kind of meted out in small chunks around right. the country until they could see if it was going to be a hit or not. And this changed that.
Oh, totally. Totally changed it. It was enormous. People were afraid to go in the ocean. I mean, it was a huge cultural phenomenon.
Right. SNL with Landshark.
That's
it was,
right.
It was everywhere.
All of that. So one of the things about novelty songs that I like is when an artist sort of takes advantage of a fad or something in pop culture that's really hot at the moment. And then they, you know, make a song related to that, like Pac-Man Fever
right.
was one, or Disco
right.
Duck
yep.
or, you know, those kinds of things. I'm not saying I necessarily like those songs, but I'm saying I like that as sort of an idea that music can just oftentimes doesn't have to be super serious and reflect, you know, any great political stance or some
deep
kind of
themes.
Deep themes and feelings and emotion and everything. It can just be like, hey, this is something we all enjoy and let's enjoy it in
right.
this format as well.
But it is interesting, and I haven't, again, done a deep study of this, but I think it really does make them of the moment.
Yeah.
And so where the movie Jaws can stand 30 or 40 years later.
Yes.
You know, some of these songs, if you played them for someone today, if you played them for your kids, they would not probably have the same reaction that they might enjoy it because it's sort of clever, but
yeah,
you lose some of the context 30 and 40 years on being so far away from the original source material.
I think that is, you're completely right about that. That is absolutely true. And we're going to see that, I think, a little bit in my pick as well. So anything else on Mr. Jaws or?
Not really. The only thing I'll just let folks know, because I didn't know, there's a song in there. The one song that I was even not familiar with when I re-listened to it this morning was I'm Not in Love by 10cc.
Mm-hmm.
I was not familiar with
yeah.
that, but I could never, all these years, I could never make out the line. That they, and it's about right actually where you cut the song off, so folks will have to go and
okay.
listen to it online. But what they're saying there is big boys don't cry.
Yeah.
I didn't know what they were saying. Yes. for 40 plus years. I haven't known quite what they were saying at that moment, and now I got it. Thanks to doing this podcast.
That's a great song, and it had a little bit of a resurgence of interest with the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Oh, is that right?
Because it's the song, I believe it's the song that opens the movie. You know, there's a lot of 70s songs in that,
right.
in that soundtrack, and I think that's the first one that you hear. With the character as a young kid. So, and that's the whole thing, the big boys don't cry and all that stuff. Yeah. So that,
there you go.
So there you go. Yes. All right. So speaking of, you know, trying to take advantage of a pop cultural moment, something that's already a fad in some other way, there was a song that was just huge to me in 1978. And to some extent remains that way to me if you consider the fact that I actually have this 45 on the jukebox down here in the basement. I do have this. The song was King Tut. And, you know, you mentioned the Landshark on Saturday Night Live. So Steve Martin, in 1978, at this point, I would have been 11 years old. Steve Martin was as big a star as there was for like me and my friends. You know, enormous, right?
Right. We thought
he was hilarious. Everything he did was just, you know, it just spoke to us. You know, the arrow through the head and the jerk, yeah,
ground shaking.
The, you know, wild and crazy guy, all that stuff. And he would just, you know, as I got older, I sort of realized that the humor is a little bit smarter than I thought at the time. But it works on a lot of different levels. You can just think of it as just goofy humor. And he was just so crazy and weird. Back in the 70s, he's completely sort of changed his whole persona.
You might say he was a wild and crazy guy.
Exactly. And so we had like record, you know, when you get like comedy albums of like, you know, stand-up shows, right? He had a couple of those that were big hits. We had those. We would see him on Saturday Night Live, as I mentioned. You mentioned, you know, he went on to movies like The Jerk and stuff like that. And he also recorded this song, which was really funny. Not just because it's just a funny written song, but just also the idea of just writing a novelty song about this museum exhibit, right? Like that's, but at the time, King Tutankhamun
was touring.
Yeah. Like the touring exhibit of like his, mm-hmm. You know, like antiquities that were uncovered from
right.
his tomb. And it was
a big
a
deal,
huge deal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so Steve Martin jumped on that and he wrote this song.
Thought it'd see people stand in line to see the boy king. How'd you get so funky? Did you do the monkey?
Born in Arizona, moved to Babylonia. out just to see him. I took all my money and bought me a museum. Buried with a donkey. He's my favorite honky.
Born in Arizona, moved to Babylonia, King.
Dancing by the night. The ladies love his style. Rocking for the mile.
He ate a crocodile.
All right, I want to make sure we got my favorite line in there, which was, he gave his life for tourism. I just think that's so clever. The other thing I want to mention is the song is credited to Steve Martin and the Toot Uncommons is the name of the backing band.
Toot, T-O-O-T?
Yes.
Toot Uncommons.
Yes. Clever, right? Clever. The band was actually, the band that backed him on that was actually the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, which was a 70s, you know, sort of country rock band.
Mm-hmm.
He had some relationship with them. I once read his autobiography where he talked about early days in LA or something like that, trying to make it as a comedian. You know, you'd have to play sometimes like open for bands or things like that as a stand-up, and he made some connection with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. So they
And that's kind of interesting because he's had an affinity, obviously, for that type of music all his life then, because he's kind of a bluegrass guy now, isn't he?
He is totally, and that's what's funny. So he actually, as goofy as this is, he actually is a serious musician. So, so one of the things he's done in, you know, late in his career is, he leads a bluegrass band called the Steep Canyon Rangers, and they've put out a number of albums, and they're serious. They're not goofing around.
Right.
You know? So
I've seen him play the banjo on TV performances before, and he's amazing.
And he did that even in his stand-up days, and it was sort of as a joke, but you could tell he like actually could really play.
He knew it.
He really could play well. And that's what kind of made it sort of fit into his humor too, because you didn't expect that.
Right.
You know, you'd have the white suit and you'd play the banjo and have the rabbit ears or something, right?
Right.
So funny thing, I did not know this until today in sort of doing some poking around, that he did once record a version of King Tut with the Steep Canyon Rangers as a bluegrass style.
Really?
Of the song. So if you find it, if you go on Spotify and you look for it, it was 2011. So it's on one of their albums, and it's at the very end of the album, and it's like a live version of King Tut done bluegrass style. I mean, obviously it's still jokey because it still has all these goofy lines,
right?
Born in Arizona, moved to Babylonia, and all this kind of goofy stuff. But the playing of it is kind of straight. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the music portion of it is not really
If you didn't listen
joking.
To the words, you could just enjoy the song.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So I was glad I discovered that, because I kind of had this sense in my mind that he wanted to put stuff like that behind him, but it's kind of sweet that he still embraces that in some way, right?
Yeah. Right, absolutely. And Tommy. You still see him sometimes show up occasionally on some of these SNL anniversary shows and things like that. And, you know, he still sometimes lets that real comedic side come out.
Yeah. So, Chris, will you stick around for tomorrow's show?
Okay.
We got a guest room. You can hang out there.
Sounds good. I got my sleeping bag.
Make us some breakfast and what have you. And we'll do this again tomorrow, right? We have a couple more picks. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. You can find the show on all the big podcast platforms, Apple Music, Spotify, Google Play, all that stuff. If you have any affinity for certain novelty songs, you'd like to share that with us, you can call our suburban party line, 612-440-1984, and leave a message. We'll get your voice on an upcoming show. We'd love to hear what novelty songs you like. Or you can email us, rock@suburbspod.com, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. And those, and by the way, that at Suburbs Pod thing is called a handle, and that's foreshadowing for the song I'm going to play tomorrow. All right.
Exciting.
All right. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Chris Wadsworth.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Don't think I'm was his mommy.
Born in Arizona, moved to Babylonia. He was born in Arizona.
Got a condo made of stoner.
Came to.
$10,000 for me by myself. For that, you get the head, the tail, the whole damn thing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Quint. We'll take it under advisement.